Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We are in the epicenter of all things Dundalk with one of my favorite Dundalk people. We're at Costas. They welcome me back in, but they're a little upset that I've spent so much time at Timonium lately. But I'm back here at the bar. Mr. Costas has been staring at me here. I got a family portrait right there on the right. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery, Candy Cane Cash. I know I'm in Dundalk when the Causey family, I turned right back here at the machine, and they were buying lottery tickets. They did not win, but I did have a $3 winner on the way out the door, so I am appreciative of that. John Allen is here, not only one of my Kemosabes and old buddies, but... got to have a rock star on during the holidays. Not on tour. This time last year, weren't you running around with like Brother Kane this time last year?
We were out with Steel Panther.
What it was. Okay. So
year before was Brother Kane.
No tours.
No tours this December. Nope.
Family.
Family, yep. Got to see my youngest dance in the Nutcracker. Got to see her be the Snow Queen and the Sugar Plum Fairy and stuff. That was pretty great. She's a beautiful dancer. And
did you have Mr. Henson in elementary school as your music teacher?
I did not.
Because I had him at Colgate. He was, weird story, but he was murdered in the late 1980s. Mr. Statham knew him, who
good
was
Lord.
Here earlier. But I thought Mr. Minutelli was at your school, right? Is an instrument. A lot of our teachers shared Colgate and Eastwood, right? So Mr. Henson, when I was a boy, was my elementary school music teacher. We had the little flute recorder things and the bells and the xylophones and all things we did. He took us every single year that I mean, three or four times in my childhood, I went to the Lyric to see the Nutcracker.
Oh.
Okay? So today, to get these candy canes.
Eastwood, we didn't have that kind of culture in Eastwood.
didn't have field trips?
We had field trips.
What kind of education? I thought you had a Baltimore County education.
But I don't remember the Lyric, though.
So these candy cane cash tickets come from the Maryland Lottery, and I live in Towson.
Okay.
And I had to pick them up. They smell like peppermint. They smell like Santa Claus. So I had to pick them up. So today, I'm driving into the city on 83. And I was going to get off on North Avenue to go to the lottery headquarters at the Montgomery Park. And I was going to get off at like Martin Luther King, and I didn't. And I went down Maryland Avenue, and I made the left at UB where I went to school, and there were buses along the back of the Lyric.
Oh, going to the Lyric.
And I looked, and I'm like, it's December 18th. What in the world could be playing at the Lyric?
Oh, no.
He's on tour. I wonder if Zeppelin's here tonight. You know, so I looked on my SeatGeek, and it said the Nutcracker.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, man, the Nutcracker at the Lyric. I used to go to that with Mr. Henson. It's the first time I ever went to the Lyric because you would see Tchaikovsky, Bach, Wagner, Mozart. They had all that stuff there.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a 7-8-year-old boy. My teacher takes me down on a field trip. I don't know anything about the Nutcracker. I still, you know, it was like classical nonsense. I wanted to hear the Village People or whatever. It's 1976. But I do think that there's a sort of a musical part of, like, I remember the Nutcracker as a kid. Now your daughter's in it, right?
Yeah, so, that's great.
And now, you bragged three times to me about it. You must really be proud of that.
Oh, she was great. I'm going to post a picture of her doing a leap. You know, that her mom
It's a performance
took.
Family. The
very
family.
Cool.
Yes.
Yeah. But you got me stumped now. So we didn't share those music teachers, but we had, I remember my band teacher at Eastwood, the first guy we had. What were the brothers' names that owned the restaurant in the Broadway Market, the something Brothers Broadway Market, the restaurant right up front?
Okay.
This is going to
drive. The bakery family?
No.
Greek family?
It was Greek.
All right.
They were Greek.
That's but, okay, but keep
that
going.
Was his last name. That was my band teacher in Eastwood Elementary.
Your first drum teacher.
Yeah, I was so lucky, man. My last name was Allen, so they would go alphabetical.
I was Aparicio. You're always ahead of me.
To ask you, like, what instrument you wanted to take. Poor Bubba Zink, man. He had to, like, take whatever.
French horn?
Whatever. He actually played trombone, yeah. He was good. But where are you, Bubba Zink? I miss you, man.
I can find Bubba's in Delaware. I know
is
Bubba.
He?
I
okay.
got Bubba. Bubba's all my right. dude, man. That's a elementary school and CCD at Our Lady of Fatima.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, it is Christmas time. John's here. We're trying to celebrate a little bit. I don't know of a bigger miracle this year that's happened than Ed Lauer.
Yes.
And this all comes full circle. I mean, John and I have been friends for a million years, and we used to drive around, go to concerts together. John and I were together the night my mother died, and we would talk about Gina Schock because we didn't know her.
Right.
And we met Gina together for the very first time at Drug City a couple years ago.
Oh, yeah.
We're now, like, you've been in a band with Gina. But when Gina called me and said, "Here's that cute boy that did the show. Looks a little bit like Johnny Resnick. He looks a little bit like Keith Urban, don't he? And does he play guitar?" And I'm like, "Man, John sings and John don't play no guitar."
Right.
And then I find that you actually play guitar, which I
very badly, but
well, that's why I didn't recommend you. So she said,
"You didn't know that."
She said, "I need a guitar player. I did not think of you."
No,
and I've known you a long time.
Right.
I would have said Nick, maybe. Yeah. We didn't Nick. Yeah. So I recommended Ed Lauer. I said, "Well, he's going to do some tunes." So she got to know Ed. Ed went over to her house in Dundalk and got to know her. Ed texted me and said, "She might be the nicest person I've ever met in my life, but I can't be in her band because I have this and that. But my brother-in-law, Jay, is going to get in her band."
Right.
And then they said, "Do you know a bass player?" I'm like, "I don't know any bass player. Geddy Lee. I don't know. Chip's enough. I don't." I'm like, "Oh, yeah, I know Steve Ports, Elaine's husband." Yeah, so I put this little band together with you guys a couple years ago, but Ed was a part of it, and Ed was on stage with you guys that night at the Hard Rock.
Yeah.
Right? Ed Lauer, my background with Ed is 33 years ago, 34 years ago. I'm on the radio. He was a listener of mine. Howard Scher knew him, and Howard said to me, "You see that dude there with the Oriole hat? Man, that dude's an unbelievable musician. He's great. Mm-hmm. He sings like an angel. He can sing anything. He can play anything. Mm-hmm. He does it on a..." You can go over to Pepper's and see him. So in 1993 or 4, somewhere beginning of my... I went and watched Ed Lauer play in front of a brick wall at Pepper's. His Love and Loneliness. He had a song called Goodbye that was his original. I have the CD.
Okay.
I can almost sing it because I heard him play it so much back in that time. I've known Ed 33 years. I've known John a little longer than that. I didn't know that you would even have known each other, but Jason Heiser, who is your drummer in Stone Horses, who I've sang songs with Jason. You don't even know this, but Eddie and I and Jason have sang songs at The Horse and at Admiral's Cup because Eddie's played
1-800 rent a drummer. That's Jason.
Chesapeake Sons, baby, right?
Jason's moniker.
Jason also carried my mother's casket along with you. He was working at Connolly's funeral home when my mother died.
Right.
So I have this connection to Jason that he probably doesn't know. He also looks like the Jesus guy at the Orioles games, but that's another story altogether. He does.
Love
I thought
guy.
It was him for a minute, but it wasn't. So Jason's your guy, and I don't know how you know Ed. I've never asked you this. I put Ed in a band with you, but you're like, "I know Ed. Jason and Fells Point, and he's a guitar. We're all musicians." And how do you know Ed, man? I don't even know how you know Ed.
I think the first time I met Ed was in the 90s.
Oh, you've known him that long.
Friends of ours took us down. Like on a Saturday night, and he was, I think he had just played like, what was the little place? Ledbetter's. I think he had just played Ledbetter's, man. God, that place was so small, and it was nuts to
I
butts.
Got a Ledbetter's story for you when you're done. And it involves Ed Lauer.
But Eddie was there, and it was kind of funny because at the time I'd cut all my hair off. I think my hair was white, and these friends that I was with, they were the girls that knew him, they introduced me to him, and he was looking at me, and he was like, "You're John Allen." I'm like, "Yeah." He's like, "From Child's Play." I'm like, "Yeah."
John Allen, that
he,
John.
He didn't believe it.
What happened to your hair?
He's like, he was.
Well, this is the first time in my life my hair is longer than yours.
Yeah. He was
ever.
He was highly skeptical. It's pretty funny. But yeah, so I've kind of, we've known each other kind of
for a long time.
Yeah, for a long time.
I
just,
didn't know
just
that.
Just kind of on the periphery, right?
God.
I mean, Baltimore is a small town.
It is.
And the music scene is small. And but through Jason playing with him all the time, we got to be better friends. And then with the Gina thing, he was basically our music director. He kind of made sure everybody kind of got together, and he kind of took that responsibility on, even though he knew he was kind of handing it off, you know, like that he couldn't commit to the
Being
amount
in
of
a
time.
Band,
So it was great. It was great to get to know him and you know, be friends with him. And and what you're leading up to, I guess, is that he just had a heart transplant. And
dude, I was with you. You and I were together in Hagerstown before your gig. We had a night just, well, I don't think we put a picture. We went to see a Meat Loaf tribute band that I like. And like John,
well,
and
it
I
was
are, John and I are close in the real world, probably closer than anybody ever.
It was
ever
Meat Loaf's band.
It was Meat Loaf's band with Caleb Johnson and this beautiful girl from Jersey, Kaylee Baxter, doing the Meat Loaf thing. And we went to dinner that night. And we're sitting at the bar eating food. And you're like, you're like, to me, you're like, you know about Ed Lauer. I'm like, what? And you're like, Ed had a heart attack. And I'm like, why? I wasn't on the internet. And I like lost my shit. I mean, at dinner that night, I'm like, and you're like, they don't know if he's going to make it. And I'm like, what?
Well,
and
I don't
this
know
was
if I said
like,
that, but.
No, but like, he needed a heart transplant.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's, he's got a really rough thing here. I mean, everybody would acknowledge that.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, you told me within a day or two of it happening, it became a little more public in the next couple of days after that. And then it was a GoFundMe, and there were, it was like, God, we're trying to keep Ed alive. Ed is home right now. Jay texted me a little while ago. Ed had a heart transplant.
He's doing all the right things.
Have you talked to Ed?
I haven't. I meant to call him on the way up here, but then traffic was so like intense.
Well, Gina Shock was supposed to be here with us. She's had a family issue. She's fine. She just couldn't be here today. She felt awful about it. We're trying to reschedule. She's home for the holidays. But Gina, I stopped by her house last week.
Yeah.
By stupid. I was at Deep Pasquale's. I offered her sandwiches. She didn't answer. And I was coming to see Calvin down here in Edgemere, and she said, come by the house. I haven't hugged you in a year. So I stopped by to see Gina at her house. And I went in, and we got like 2 minutes into it. She's like, how's Ed? I'm like, let's call Ed. So we called Ed. So we talked to Ed a week ago today.
Nice.
And Ed was like, I mean, we were on a speakerphone at Gina's kitchen, and it was like, we both got like, you know, a little messy and like, so Ed's doing great. Ed couldn't be here. Jay couldn't be here because Ed had to be at the hospital. Gina couldn't be here. So John is Gina, Ed, Jay. I mean, let you be Jason if you want to be. You're a good drummer. See, here's the thing that I said to your wife behind your back. John Allen's here, by the way. Stone Horses sometimes, Child's Play sometimes. It was Child's Play. You played Wrecker.
Yes.
September.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So I go to the show that night. Nice crowd. A lot of people knew me. I knew them. Your wife's there. Your children are there. Nick's family's there. Half his family's on stage with the band. About two songs in, you know, you open, you do your thing. And I walked over to your wife, and I said, I don't know how he put Jason in the band, but that he could find anybody that could drum acceptably for him would be like me finding radio hosts that could be acceptable to me.
Yeah.
What do you look for in a drummer, being a drummer?
Well, when he first came down, the big part, I think, was feel and groove. And when he initially came down to kind of practice with us, it was there. And I was like, this is cool, you know. And he looks like Steve Perry. So
was he familiar with your drumming, like as a Child's Play fan or as a...
I think so.
Okay.
We used to do, when we were doing reunion shows when Brian was still alive, I remember Jay being right up front, man, with a Miller Lite in his hand.
So he was a fan of the band,
out,
too.
You know, and that's, right down front.
Well, I mean, yeah. I think that's... like, I've talked to Todd Zuckerman about Styx and him being a Chicago kid who wound up in Styx. But he wasn't, like, the world's biggest Styx fan. You know what I mean? Like, he was a scientific, technical drummer or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I find, like, Rush hiring Annika Nils to be the drummer. It's like... Kicks had you drum for a minute, right? There is a point where you see a quarterback, you know, Philip Rivers, you know, come back and be able to play. Yeah. I often think on the drum thing, I could never have been a drummer. I don't hear music that way. Mm-hmm. I think I could learn to play the guitar. I'm missing a finger. I think I could sing. I could learn to play the guitar. I think maybe I could learn the bass, but I don't hear bass great. But I'm always enthralled by drummers because I remember you as a kid on a pad. I remember there was another kid in my neighborhood that was a drummer who had a kit and would bang and bang and bang. And, like, to this day, if you put me behind a kit, I just – wouldn't even know where to be. It's such a right left brain thing, and I think there's so many styles.
I don't know.
That's I guess my point to your wife that night in playing was he was playing your music, your parts, your drums, and I said to her, I know John's pretty particular. He must really think, you know, how the hell did he ever hire a drummer? That must have been hard for him. But you decided you couldn't sing and drum in your own band.
Yeah, I do give him a hard. Well, I used to give him quite a hard time to go. I have to admit, and he puts up with me. You know, so, but he's great. And, speaking of the Kicks thing, I was just filling in when Jimmy Chalfant had the heart attack. And it was, it was eye-opening. I mean, because Jimmy Chalfant, such a great drummer, and he does everything. Like, he, you know, he's back there, and they have, like, you know, this. They have tracks that run, like, the special effects kind of things. Like, you know, they have all these, like, little things that come in during songs, but, you know, you got to start the track, and you got to come in the right place and everything. And I spent, like, weeks and weeks with headphones on.
And you love Kicks. You knew the songs, right?
I love Kicks and, like, learning. But learning the songs was a completely, like, different thing. And I have no short-term memory any longer. Like, I can remember stuff. You can talk about...
You could play Rat Race right now,
well,
right?
Yeah,
you could play an
AC/DC
song
right now. Well, yeah,
right,
but
now,
that's,
right?
That's repetition over the years, right? But, it, like, I've got memories from Holabird and all, you know, younger, like when I was really little. But
you still play Green Man Alishi?
But I can't make new memories. And trying to memorize that stuff and... It was just, and then I had like one rehearsal with the Ableton as the system that they use. It was just, it was like, oh my gosh, it was not a complete catastrophe, but it was like, we played a wedding. I filled in for a wedding that they were getting paid really handsomely for, and the groom, it didn't matter what I did back there. The groom was going to have, he was spending so much money on the band. They had a blast. They were loving it. They having Kicks for a reception. It was amazing. It was down, there's a small club near the Anthem in D.C.
Okay.
On Wharf Street, Union Hall or something. And
that's what I would do if I got rich. I'd hire Van Halen to play my wedding or whatever. You know?
They had a blast. So, but it was fun. But yeah, I just did that Rick and Steve podcast a couple of weeks ago.
The podcast.
Yeah, and Steve called me out on it. Like, you know, I didn't prepare like I should. The sad part was I really tried to prepare, but it just didn't.
It was like me with algebra. I tried really hard.
It
I just
did
didn't
not
get, it.
Get in there. You know, I just. You know, I tried, Steve, I swear.
Well, on the drum side, if Gina were here now, by the way, Gina Shock.
Oh, and by the way, speaking of, so I started on guitar in fourth grade, and it was like slow going. And I just, picking the drums up was just way more natural to me. You know, watching guys on TV and how they played, and I just, you know, it seemed to kind of come a lot more naturally, at least playing, you know, straight stuff.
But in elementary school, you were playing the big band thing, like I always felt bad for the drummers in middle school because like it wasn't rock, it was like it was marching band kind of stuff, right? Literally, right?
Yeah, one guy on a bass drum, two guys on snare,
percussion.
You know? Yeah, and I always like there were a couple favorites that the teacher in junior high, the band instructor really liked, and there were 12 of us. At Holabird.
That
I don't
drummers,
know if you knew
right?
that. Yeah, there were 12
every kid in Dundalk wanted to be John Allen.
Well, what happened was we had all those schools coming from all over eastern Baltimore County for the Gifted and Talented program. So we had this, like, we were inundated.
Mike Daugherty was a drummer, yeah?
Mike Daugherty was...
I was just with him in Seattle.
He plays drums now, but he was not in the school band. He was not a percussionist. But... You know, and I just always felt like, I'm like, look, man, I play drum kit. I can play probably better than these other guys. But as far as, like, reading music and putting up with the band instructor and all that, I was relegated to playing the triangle. or you know, I really dug playing the timpanis. That was fun. But
I had M.B. Gordy on this week.
I don't know who that is. Who's that?
Google him. He's a Marylander from Salisbury.
Okay.
His sister's a big fan of the show.
Okay.
He's won 2 Grammys.
Right.
He just got nominated again. I had him on for 45 minutes. He is a percussionist of world beat music.
Okay.
And he talks about all of these instruments I've never heard of.
Mm-hmm.
He's out in L.A. He does a lot of movie soundtrack stuff. Just a wonder. You're going to hear it on the air this week. M.B. Gordy.
I think we talked about him on another Costas trip here.
Yeah. So he came on yesterday.
Awesome.
He's up for a Grammy February 1st. He's a Marylander. He went to Towson. And he's a wonderful guy. And he's a rock and roll guy. You were talking about Peter Gabriel and all that. The drum thing. If Gina were here, and I spent 20 minutes with Gina last week at her house, we spent 10 on the phone with Ed Lauer, and the other 10 we spent talking about you, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and Cyndi Lauper.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish she were here, and she'll come on, but we're just visiting at her house, and we did a lot of, like, I don't know. She and I have gotten kind of close over the years. We're just talking about all sorts of things and mm-hmm. family and this and the house and West Coast and East Coast. And she's like, oh, I saw John. John was at the Hall of Fame. And Wendell saw him, and we all saw him. And I'm like, yeah, you showed up in the video mm-hmm. for Girls Just Want to Have Fun, or was it Time After Time? I don't know what
it was. Girls Want to Have Fun, I think,
so
yeah.
Gina told me the story that she wants to tell the audience that she got recruited into Cyndi Lauper's band because Cyndi was trying to do an all-girl band.
Yeah.
And she said when Cyndi thought of girl drummer, she thought of me. Mm-hmm. They called me, and I'm like, sure, I'll do it. So mm-hmm. now all of a sudden, I got to rehearse. I got to learn stuff. She's like, I didn't rehearse with the band. I got there. I'm there. It's a big deal. I'm always nervous because it's Gina. Mm-hmm. You know, she's like, I want to be great. I want it to be great. And she's like, rehearsed. And then the next day, they're like, oh, you got a click track. She's like, what? You know, like, I don't know what that means to a drummer, but like, you're laughing.
Yeah.
And she's like, it went okay. It went great. I'm proud of it. It was great. But man, it was really hard to learn mm-hmm. a song or a thing mm-hmm. at this advanced age and go on stage and play it when you haven't. It's that, like, to your point with Kicks, no matter what, it's really hard.
Well, and playing to a click live, like, it's a, you know, you got to learn how to do that over time, I think. And then, like, I mean, if she...
No, what if you need to do it tonight?
Right. I mean, that's amazing that she did that. And I was there, and she was great. To give you a quick story, like, when the first time in the recording studio, I'd never played to a click, ever. And we go up to Sheffield Recording Studios, and $100 an hour.
This is for Rat Race?
This is before that. First demos we ever recorded. And we had saved for like a year. You know, it was like going to be $100 an hour.
And all you knew is the basement and like rehearsing, right?
We played live. We played live a lot.
But you didn't know studio, is what I'm saying, right?
Right, yeah. We'd never, and when you record, you know, you got your headphones on and the mix sounds terrible. It doesn't give you a vibe. And then the engineer goes, you want to play to a click? And I was like, sure, what the hell? So we play good old rock and roll, good old boys, you know, our opener forever. You know, and we start the song off.
Start the song off,
all good, boom, bah, straight beat, right? And I'm like, yeah, I can play to a click, do the verse, that, into the pre-chorus. All of a sudden, the click is like, gong, 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 gong. It's completely against what I'm doing. And I'm like, I had to stop.
Maybe I don't know how to play drums anymore.
I'm like, wait a second. And I'm like, that click is wrong, man. Because what happens when you learn the song, and like I guess I was speeding up on that part. I learned it wrong, and the muscle memory was so strong, and like always playing
because
it,
live it's
playing
faster.
It the same way, you know. So like, you know, so then after that, I started playing to a click. As soon as we would start working on a song, I'd play to find the tempo, and I'd play to that click. So I learned it right from the get instead of having to go back.
Like a golf game,
relearn.
You learn the right way to do it, right?
Right. So, you know, that was something, you know.
I just thought he was a long-haired hippie in a band, you know, rocking out, chasing girls, doing all that. There was, and knowing you even then, and certainly knowing more about money, studios, having read all the rock stars' books about being broke and record companies and drugs and relationships and girlfriends and Donald Trump's trying to screw your singer's girlfriend. Like, I mean, true. I wrote about it. Like, I forget how scientific it is and how nerdy y'all are. I mean, Gina Shock and I last year snuck off a year ago this week, we went to see the Black Crowes down at MGM National. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm with Gina, and I don't know Gina like that. Like, I know Gina, we're friends, and I didn't chase the Go-Go's around. I haven't even seen the documentary.
Oh, it's great.
No, everybody loves the documentary. I still haven't seen it.
The greatest part is the documentary's going on for like 10 minutes, and you don't see Gina yet because they had a different drummer when they first started.
Right.
And then all of a sudden you hear this voice, and you go, that's Gina.
That's Gina.
You can hear
I joined the band.
You can hear the Baltimore accent and everything. Anyway,
I lost my train of thought. I lost my train
the
of thought.
The documentary and then
with
Gina.
I took her down to the Black Crowes. We got there early, and it's at the casino, and I got front row tickets. I mean, it wasn't anything special. It was just I grabbed front row tickets that were available, and we got down there early, and we were up in the front row, and I'm like there for like Black Crowes, get a beer. She drove, so I can have a couple drinks, whatever. And she's a nerd. She's up in the front. Let me see what the kid is, and what are they playing, and it was all technical. Everything she wanted to see was the equipment.
You're saying that's nerdy?
It's right, exactly. It's no regular what? Guy that goes to a concert does that, but a drummer who's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, who's been in a band for 50 years, who's been all over the world, the first thing musicians see is so much different. It's like watching football with a football coach.
Right.
They just don't see it the way you see it.
Right.
And I think that hearing you talking about click tracks, hearing her talk about click tracks, I have an appreciation. I've never drummed. I can't drum.
And Black
How different it is when they tell you to play left-handed. You know what I mean? Right. In a different way.
I saw Bunny Carlos play left-handed when SR-71, when we opened for them in Anaheim, when we were just finished with the second SR record. I was like, is he what? He's playing left-handed. I guess he just got bored playing right-handed, so he started playing left-handed live.
How could you? You couldn't do that, right?
I could if I had, if I felt like it had time to do it. Yeah, yeah.
Well, you can keep beat because it's in your, you got a clock in your soul, literally, right?
Yeah.
I
wouldn't be easy to learn. I think I would need a few months, but but
what comes easy and what comes hard? Because I would say, by the way, John Allen is here. We're at the Casa. I would say when things come hard, this is one of the reasons I've gotten to this AI thing. And I'm trying to get you and everybody I know who's really you're a solopreneur. You run a band. It's a small business. No matter what it is, there's so many things, especially with music and things that you can create as a creative
songwriters
human.
And producers are using it as a tool already to quite an extent.
It's a fantastic tool that can be, but it's also like things that are hard, math for me, not math, but like algebra. I had a quantum physics personal
show. So that's what, to me, what songwriting is. It's like trying to find that, it's like Beautiful Mind or Albert Einstein, trying to find that the right formula, trying to find that I'll work on a chorus forever. I come up with a song idea and I'm like, yes, this is right. I've got the verse, I've got the pre-chorus, and then I write a chorus and it's like I listen to it and I go, it's not right yet. It's not quite right. And I got to get it to my,
Tom Scholz did that for years back in the 80s.
Yeah. So it's kind of, it's like a math problem and you're trying to figure that out. So so a tool that could help get you over that hump, I think would be great. Just for an experiment, my guitar player with Stone Horses, he went on one of the songwriting things and he plugged in like what he wanted, and the song was actually kind of cool. Lyrically, it was not great. I'd have a really hard time.
Well, fix
with
it.
But musically, it was really, it was kind of like, all right, yeah, this is kind of cool.
Well, the reason I'm talking so much about it is I've become immersed in the last 5 or 6 weeks. It's never going to go away.
No,
it's sort of like texting or the internet or anything that came into your life. That's just not going to go backwards, and it's not going to be a matter if, it's going to be a matter when. And I would just say to anybody out there that's really smart, whenever you discover this, you're going to feel like a fool for not picking it up 6 months ago, a year earlier, because it's given me time back, it's given me energy back. Dude, I would tell you, as you're a really creative dude, it will inspire you in some kind of way to open your mind to know how you want to use it or how you don't want to use it or how you feel like ethically. Like, I told Max Weiss last week, editor-in-chief of Baltimore Magazine, I said, listen.
Oh, I love her.
Luke and I, you love Max?
Yeah, she did a piece years ago on us when we were, I guess, at war with Susie Mudd with Maryland Musician Magazine.
She?
Yeah, it was pretty good.
I love Max.
I think it was Max.
So I told Max last week.
Right, she wrote for City Paper,
back
in the day?
Yeah, the Mighty Max. Yeah. So I told her that Luke and I can do post-game radio Monday morning off of the New England game, right?
Okay.
So Sunday night we'll watch a game. Monday morning we'll get up, do three pieces, 30, 40 minutes. You all know what we do at Baltimore Positive, right? Out on YouTube, whatever. If I take those transcripts and I throw it into AI and say, write a column for me based on what I think.
Right.
And I wrote to Luke last week. I haven't published any of this. I've just been, it's in my chat. But I could copy and paste it and launch it up. And you would read it. And maybe I'd make a tweak or three, fix the lead.
Right.
Yeah, take some stuff out that sounds like not like me, but it's mostly like me. I admitted to Luke last Monday. It wrote a column off the game last week, the Pittsburgh loss, that was better than anything that I could write. It was funnier than me. I was pissed. I said to Luke, I'm like, this thing writes better than me. It's effing pissing me off. I'm like, it's not. and it does it instantly.
Well, we both had Mr. Pazurek for seventh grade English, and
a lot of stairway to heaven.
He spent the first half of the year just playing guitar and singing parody songs. So there's a little hole, and I think both yours and my our English our writing probably.
I would just say kick the tires on it because there's no wrong answers on the AI thing, and I think from your creative side, whenever you jump into it, because your daughters get you into it, your wife, maybe you take a plunge because of me. Whenever you do it, March, April, next year, there's going to come a moment where you're going to be texting me at 3 in the morning with this aha, because it's who you are. Your hair is going to be on fire. You're going to be like, oh, my God, I can't believe – I know why you were so crazy about this last Christmas.
Do you own stock in some AI company?
I'm just telling – but when I talk to people about it early on, it really – they do look at me like my son's here. When I told him about AI, he looks at me like, you know, that's theft. That's fake. That's not real. I let him tell.
But it's not going anywhere. So
but it's not going anywhere.
Yeah. That's the problem.
You just got to, you know, you got
to
use it
wisely.
Have
to deal with it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was watching your cast this morning and talking about, I just want to speak to one thing that you didn't say that is
he's mad at me.
The big overriding thing.
No, I'm
not mad at you. But what you're saying about what not, you know, you don't know what the real story is with whether.
Oh, Harbaugh?
Yeah.
Oh, you're talking about football.
So here's the
I thought you were really mad.
No. So here's the problem with that. Like if you know, if you doubt, you know, what the truth, if he told the truth or lied.
Well, once you've
earlier,
lied a lot, I'm from Dundalk, you know, I had family a lot. Like, I just don't trust people who lie to me.
You don't know what, even if it is the truth, you don't know if it's the truth anymore. Like the jobs report, like the inflation report, supposedly,
like the
coming down.
Epstein files.
Like we don't know now, because, like, hey, you know.
It can't be known.
You've been lied to so often that, you know, how do you know what
the
truth is anymore?
Did Lamar practice today? I don't know either.
I'm curious.
How can you have the – you ever had a flu on Wednesday?
Yeah, no.
Play on Thursday if you have
the flu. But what is the definition of flu? Is that vomiting and, you know, maybe – is it the stomach? Or is it just like maybe –
flu to me, if to have the flu or to tell someone – and I would tell people – I don't know that I've ever had the flu.
Yeah.
Like when I think about like
I mean people die from it.
I mean in bed 5 days, pooping, peeing, throwing up, can't move, head, fever, can't even watch television. You know what I mean? Like that's the flu to me.
Yeah.
I've been that sick a handful of times, maybe not in the last 15 years. It's one of the reasons I don't shake people's hands and it pisses them off. But I'm like, I've been sick in 12 years. I sort of like that gig.
Mm-hmm.
But the flu to me is bad.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a cold. It's not, I had the trots last night. Stay home. See how we feel. It's, I can't get out of bed. That's the flu is, I cannot function. That's the flu to me.
Right?
I mean, that's the way I would define
Maybe they misspoke.
Intentionally. Maybe. John Allen's here. He's a football fan. He's a drummer. He's a singer in rock. So plug your new thing because I was fortunate on said trip to Hagerstown where I found that Ed Lauer needed a heart transplant. And we love you, Ed, and glad you're doing well.
Yes.
We were all worried like crazy about you. Still worried about you. But nonetheless, that night on the way home, you have your little Tonka toy car that the Nazi guy owns a company, but I won't get into that.
What?
You drive it.
Yeah,
so.
Before we knew
you're
crazy.
The one with the bumper sticker on the back.
No,
that says,
I don't have it.
I bought the car of the guy who threw my friend off Twitter because for being a journalist. So nonetheless, the guy with the chainsaw and the Nazi, like the whole thing. So, you put a song on for me and like you tested my ears, and that's true love to me from our friendship that you wanted me to hear your music before like maybe even your wife heard it. So she's probably worn out on you.
Yeah, she's.
She
doesn't want to hear.
She
that does. Stuff
she has no. She has as much opinion on your music as my wife has on my columns. My Lamar Jackson opinion.
Well, what I was telling you actually is
it's 20 years of
marriage. It's
too.
A weird thing with me. Like when I play my, you know, ideas or new songs.
You apologize six times to me for not being as good as you wanted to.
For other people, especially people like I mean, you were a music critic, right? So. It actually, the weird thing is, it actually allows me to hear it from another perspective. because I get so inside, you know, you're so inside the song, or at least I am when I'm writing it, that, you know, and you think you know, like, how good it can be, and you're trying to realize that, you lose all perspective, at least I do. And then when I play it for people, I'll sit there and sometimes I'll go, oh, wow, yeah, this is not as good as I thought it was.
Well, we were in the dark in the car on 70. I was afraid you were, like, looking at me to see how I...
No,
you
know, no.
Like a
it was more about my reaction,
like a
actually.
Test movie to see if I'm laughing, smiling, emoting, dancing, tapping my toe,
but like I'm
it,
saying,
you know?
It's more about, like, how I feel about it when I play it for other people. And I'm happy to say that I still felt like it was pretty good.
you're close to releasing this single that one else has heard.
Yeah, it's the mixer, once he finishes it, it'll go into the Virgin Music pipeline, which will get it up to Spotify, Apple Music, all the platforms.
Okay.
And that should be like end of February. It takes like 6 to 8 weeks for them to do all the things that they do and submit it to playlisters and all that stuff.
But the song is done as you
song
see
is done, yeah.
Oh, I'd love to hear
yeah,
it.
Yeah, song is done. And
when are we going to debut it on WNST and AM radio, baby? Yeah.
But yeah, so I could play.
Sounds
I
better
could
in
play,
mono.
The
you only
mix.
Hear it once.
But yeah, so that once the song comes out in late February, hopefully we'll have a tour I can tell you about then.
Deep Eddie Vodka makes my show better. That's a shout out to Dave Hockrun.
That's nice.
I had a orange.
Are coffee. They local? Deep
Eddie?
Yeah,
they're my friends. Yeah, okay. Dave, cool. That's all right. Cool. No, I'm just saying.
Cool.
I'm loose.
All right.
I'm loose with you.
Nice.
I'm just being funny.
Nice.
See the end of the show. It's Christmas. What's the name of the Very song?
Cool. And
Mike Scheck, Dundalk, we love you. Say hello all to right. your mom. His mom was my substitute teacher. Yours too.
Okay.
She was at Calvin Statham's piano thing. By the way, Calvin Statham was here for an hour earlier. He's 85 years old. And I said something to him, and it's our link. I mean, we like the Ravens, and we grew up in the neighborhood together. Mm-hmm. But our thing was always, we didn't roller skate together. We were music guys together, right? So, like, the music thing, and I said to him that in seventh grade, he gave me a gift singing out loud with other people in a choir and encouraging me that I was a good singer, that he wanted me on the front line. Mm. You know what I mean?
It wasn't because you're short? They put the short people up front?
No, I was just a boy's voice hadn't changed yet, so I could go, you know, high baritone
like
soprano.
You're
you know?
A soprano.
Yeah,
you're
so,
like,
yeah.
Like Vienna Choir kind of action.
I just remember Sentimental Journey. I want to go home. Yeah, so I said to him that music is the most pure thing in my life to this day, to this minute, to you being here, to me wanting to go see Triumph next year, to me missing Gina Shock here, to singing songs with Ed Lauer, who plays with your drummer and Jason, and just music. Like, I've privately invited John on a weird international sojourn in March. That's music-related. And when I look to travel now, it's not I want to go to the Ravens game and Green Bay next week. It's I want to go see the Bodines in Madison. You know what
is
I mean?
It Rock in Rio? Is that is
no,
that
no, in, no, no. AC/DC's touring South America.
Yeah.
And Bryan Adams is touring South America at the same time. Mm. And they're kind of conflicting in a couple of cities that I've never been to. So, and
you want to go to South America even though we're probably going to be bombing them.
We're not bombing anything.
Okay.
Asswipe's going to be under a prison. I can't live without believing that. I can't believe that. That's all.
It ain't happening, but okay.
I want to live long enough to see it.
Okay. All right.
You think the Trump family's just going to run the country for the next 50 years? Is that really your daughter? I hope your daughters don't believe that.
I don't know, man.
I don't know anymore either. I really don't know.
I don't know.
I fell asleep early on Wednesday night. I feel blessed for that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I don't know what I was doing.
Well, it's a football weekend.
I had no idea.
All right. So, any band? I mean, you guys played out in Hagerstown on Black Friday.
Yeah. We may have a Child's Play show
you've
coming
You've opened
up.
A couple of, like, weird things. You opened for STP, right?
We did, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you've done a lot of crap since last time I saw you,
that
man.
Was great. Those guys were awesome. If you haven't seen STP in a while, go see them. They're great. New singer.
I should have come down that
New
night.
Singer sounds just like Scott. He moves around just like Scott. He remembers the words, though, but that's the only difference.
So really. Since the last time you and I got together, I got to ask Eddie Vedder a question on the internet.
No, really.
I went out to Cameron Crowe, to the Cameron Crowe Eddie Vedder thing. I invited you to that. And I saw Robert Plant, who was unbelievable.
I wish I could have made that trip.
And I saw Pat Benatar.
Have you read the Cameron Crowe book?
I have not.
That's right, because you don't read.
I don't read new books. I just write them. No, I haven't read it. I'm still reading Geddy Lee's book.
Nice.
And now they're going out on tour. I don't know. To me, there's a lot to look forward to in 2026 for me with my business, for your band and your new single, yeah, and Ed Lauer's heart, and yeah, the fact that Rush is touring and Triumph's touring next year, and the World Cup's coming to America, even though they're corrupt SOBs, and I don't know. I'm bullish on Pete Alonso.
Yeah.
Maybe you and I'll go to an Oriole game next year. What do you think?
Sounds good. I mean, Ed's a huge Orioles fan. He's always there.
Jay told me that he has a target night in June.
Yeah.
That is the night he wants to go to a game. As doctors have told him 6 months. There's a night in June on the Oriole calendar that Ed is targeted as that is the North Star for him to stay alive, stay safe. Ed Lauer, our dear friend, that Oriole game. So I would think I'm in that night. Whatever night that is, I'm in. You're in?
Yeah, hell yeah.
I'm in. All right. Ed, we love you. We hope you're getting better. And Jay, sorry you couldn't be here. Gina Shock was going to be here, couldn't be here. She's got great stories because her band played shows this year. They played Coachella twice.
So we haven't talked about Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
So please do.
So she, you know, she's up there.
Now, what were you doing there? Give your story because it involves Child's Play and Phil, right?
Right. So the original bass player, Phil Weiser from Child's Play,
who's still in your band? He comes back and plays with you. Right.
Yeah. He actually sits on the board for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And Aaron and I got the invite a couple years back. We went, actually, the year the Go-Go's were inducted. So it was great to see Gina then and whatever. But I didn't get to meet her or talk to her or anything. That came from your radio interview, actually. This time it was me, the wife, Nick, and Phil. So East Baltimore County.
Tuxedos on.
We were there in force to cheer our girl on, man. We were screaming. I was screaming, Dundalk's in the house, Gina. We love you. You're awesome.
Girls just want to have fun. The boys want to have fun, too.
That was killer, man.
I went to one Rock and Roll Hall of Fame ceremony. Mm. It was at Barclays. Yeah. It was the year that Def Leppard, The Cure, Stevie Nicks did Stop Dragging My Heart Around with the British heartthrob guy. And she did Leather and Lace with Don Henley to start the show.
Okay.
But it started at 7 o'clock and it ended at 1:30 in the morning with a really, really... such an awful version of All the Young Dudes that I think it's been scrubbed from the internet. I mean, it was horrible. It was Def Leppard and Ian Hunter, and I don't even know what the hell. It was one of the worst things I've ever seen. To your point,
was it at the end?
At
the finale.
To your point, bands that don't rehearse, guitars that weren't even plugged. I don't know what was going on, but it was horrible. But The Cure was so good that night.
Yeah.
I'm a Cure fan because of Doug Bennett, and you know, and we had a friendship with Doug. Doug loved The Cure. I introduced him to The Cure backstage at the Patriot Center 40 years ago when I had an interview with the drummer of the band at the time.
To give you guys background, Doug Bennett was in my homeroom. He gave me a cassette of Metallica's first record and the band Raven. First record when we were younger, and so he was a music head.
He was my roommate when I was a music critic in the 80s on Kane Street. So all the record companies would send boxes. Then there were still albums, some CDs. If there was a rich band, the band had money behind them, they had a CD. Child's Play got the album.
No, you had CDs.
I'm just kidding you. But Chrysalis. But you were in that tender period where not everybody was getting a CD at that period of time. Doug would intercept my... He was an original porch pirate. He was my roommate. He would go... I'd be away during the day or asleep, and he would just meet the mailman and rip open all the boxes. Mm-hmm. And I'd come downstairs, and he'd be sitting down there drinking a beer, listening to music with his feet up. Hey, I got the new Def Leppard album. Man, this thing's unbelievable. He told me he listened to... Pour Some Sugar. I'm thinking Hysteria. Adrenalized. Hysteria. He got Hysteria, and it did come on an album, believe it or not. Mm-hmm. When Hysteria came, it was an album.
That's if you have money behind it. They did both.
Doug loved vinyl. Doug was a vinyl head. Right? Yeah. We lost Doug about 15 years ago. If Doug were here, he would love that I walked into the Target yesterday and they had vinyl. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Who the hell has a turntable? Do you have a turntable?
I do.
All right. I'll bring my albums to your house because I don't have one. I own a radio station, don't have a turntable. But Doug put that album on, and I'll never forget this. He never stopped playing. He played it for four straight days. He said, every song on this album is going to be a hit. Every song is going to be a hit.
Pretty much right.
3 years later, he was right.
I don't know how many
singles
deep they went on that.
Dude's got one arm and he's playing the drums. I mean, it was unheard. But Doug Bennett was a Cure guy, and that night at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, I was with my friend Julio Bermejo, who dragged me. I mean, he was like, "I want to go." I'm like, "I'll go with you. I'm fine. We'll do it." The Cure was so good that I'll never not see them again. I saw their concert last week, the night that Calvin did his thing. I went over to Rundle Mills and sat in the theater. By the way, theater concerts got to get better. Would you agree with that?
Yeah.
The sound, we're talking AI, we're talking like, to me, the immersive experience of going to a theater and seeing, let's say, U2's Rattle and Hum. I'm just naming a movie. Elvis's right. 68. Pick anything you want, the band, right? Whatever the movie is, Woodstock. Immersing in that with some sort of AI, HD sound in an immersive thing, to me, that's going to be the next thing. It's not going to be you shaking your ass in a Jon Bon Jovi cover band because you look a little bit like him and could sing him and do a cover band thing, right? Like, cover bands are big now, right? Tribute bands are making a lot of money in a big way. But I do think once we figure out the technology, going to the theater. I got invited last week to go see The Stones at the Max. They put the movie back out. The Cure did a movie last week. Depeche Mode did their movie last month. They're not movies, they're concerts. They're concerts in a theater.
Well, I think
I think to myself, this could be better. It could be louder. It could be.
So it depends on the theater and it depends on their sound system. I think that like when Led Zeppelin released Song Remains the Same, I know that in New York when it debuted, Jimmy Page went in to the theater and he made sure.
You meant in the 70s.
In the 70s.
Right, okay.
This is in that, I think, that book that I always tout. That he made sure there were extra, like, speakers in there and he made sure the system was tuned, right? So, you know, there's theaters out there that they're having these concert films and they just aren't equipped, you know, to a large extent.
It just comes up short and I wish it didn't because I want that badly.
Right. Well,
I want every concert I've ever seen that's ever been bootlegged to be fixed up a little bit. Now, I could do it in my basement, and I'm going to talk to my son. Hey, Barry, you buying me a Christmas gift? I got an idea for a Christmas gift because he's technical.
Right.
I just want to like have a screen on the wall and watch Tom Petty.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know what I mean? And like feel it for half an hour on a snowy night, whatever, whatever I want. I think that's the next thing for me. It's not movie. It's not sports in HD or stop and start or whatever. I think for the rest of my life, the movie music thing
has to be made better.
Audio. It can be made to be awesome. If like with the glasses and the VR thing and all of that, I just think it could be made great and better than the original to some degree. That if they were to bring out, I think maybe more modern videos. Like that Stones thing's 25 years old. It was shot in IMAX.
Is this the
Stones at the Max?
The Scorsese?
That was the one that was shot in the club. This is the one that they played down at the IMAX from the 90s. It's like it's 30 years old, but they brought it back out because the Stones. But the Stones have shot a million HD everything since then. Mm-hmm. I would think that some master mixers could go in, bring that thing out, bring some speakers into a thing, and make it more like going to see the Stones. And you saw they canceled their European tour, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he's 82 years old. I mean, I don't know what more we're going to do.
Right.
This is my plea to you to say, even Kix, you know what I mean? Even bands like Crack the Sky could bring back the best video of their best era and make it something that would be better than going to see a 75-year-old version of Steve Whiteman by his own admission, right? That he wouldn't want to do that, you know?
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know. But with Child's Play, like, we're probably going to do a show at the end of the spring, probably, maybe out in Columbia somewhere. So we're talking to some places
good.
To see.
Is that twice a year you're thinking about doing?
Yeah, we'd like to, I think.
And you're not doing M3 or you don't know
not
yet?
Doing M3.
Not doing
no,
M3.
They're only doing one day this year, and they didn't want to repeat bands. This is the word that that
And you've
that
played the last
told.
2 years, right?
Yeah, three. I think we played the last 3 years, plus we did the Kix farewell show there. So it's like, you know, give somebody else a shot at it, and we'll do
I was
our
there
thing.
For you, man, I know... It meant a lot to you. It meant a lot to the guys in the band. It meant a lot to
oh,
your families.
Oh, the Kix show.
The M3. I mean,
oh, yeah.
M3.
To finally,
playing M3.
To finally be recognized, yeah, to go out there and play. I mean,
and the Kix show, of course.
There were a lot of bands on those bills that had. We had a record deal, in the same era, and probably in this marketplace, we were bigger than a lot of those bands that were on the undercard, right? So to finally be able to ply those boards again. I played there with SR71 years ago, but to play those venues, I've played pretty much every big venue in the area except for the grand old lady, Baltimore Civic Center.
That's right. You've never played there.
I want to play that place before it goes away or I go away. So
I'm going to try to bake that up.
I hope
Frank, get on
can.
That. Book Child's Play down there one night for some.
Well, or Stone Horses, but.
I would just say I'm really, and I'll leave it at this. By the way, John Allen's here. We're Casas. We're wrapping things up for the Maryland Lottery. Candy Cane Cash. I'll have these on Friday. We're going to be at Gertrude's. Monday, we're going to be at the Planet Fitness in Timonium. I just want to say this to you as your
it's
friend.
It's killing me. I cannot remember that teacher's name, and it was the same last name. It wasn't Picora. It was...
You'll come up with it.
God,
it's okay. He's been 45 minutes. He'll text this to me at 3 in the morning. I'm about to compliment you because
right,
I went
right.
to see Child's Play, and I always screw this up because I give five different band names. I haven't said SR71 yet. I haven't said Sharp City Devils yet either.
No, you haven't said Fury yet either.
You weren't even in Fury.
Right.
Right.
You got it.
Catching on. I was so impressed by your record theater show. I've seen you in your barefoot for Brian and your whites and your M3 and your kicking up. And, I try to leave you alone as your buddy on those nights and let the fans have at you and all that. But I thought your record show a couple months ago with Nick's boy in the band and Phil back.
Mm-hmm.
And I love you, Itz. I hope you're doing okay. Mm-hmm. I just thought it was great. And I thought it was, you asked me because I videoed it and you were a little like, how do we sound? Well, because you never know up there. You're up there, you're in the moment. And I shot the video, Good Old Boys, and I put it up and everybody went wild for it. And the thing I would say to you is like, I'm so proud of that band and you carrying on in Brian's absence. But more than that, you're singing, you're in the front of the band, but like, if anybody was there, your daughters, anybody else's sons or daughters that weren't at Hammerjacks or at wherever, Gators, wherever network we played, Seagull
and
wherever it was,
Capricorn,
whatever it was,
Coast to Coast,
that they would look at this
network.
And I thought to myself that night, I'm watching you, and it's like you're not my friend anymore. You're just like a band, and I'm familiar with the music. I'm singing some of the songs, my body, all that stuff. And I'm like, my wife's asked how you guys were, because I went home. She wasn't feeling great that night.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, they feel like a band. They feel like they're going to go do that in Richmond tomorrow and Winston-Salem on Friday. Like, that's the highest compliment I can pay you, is you get together, you shake your ass in this band that's 40 years old, your singer's dead, you put it together, you got another band, everybody in the gig's got a different gig, you come back together, Nick's got a life, you got a life, Phil's got a great life, everybody, and you put it together on the stage that night, and it's not seamless because Brian's missing, so I don't feel that, but I feel like, this is your real gig. This is your band. Not that it's a reunion gig and you put it together one night, you're going through the motions, or you're just on adrenaline. It felt professional to me. So I don't know, whatever that means at this point in your life, that you pull this off and it's not muscle memory when it's not muscle memory anymore, because I don't think it's muscle memory for it. I think it's work to put the band back together and to try to get it sounding good, have Nick's son in the band, and make it as good as it ever was, because it's so important to you. When you're there, all your friends are there. Everybody's there. You got one. It's like a Kentucky Derby. You get one chance a year or two chances a year to do it. I know how important it is to you. And I told you the day after, I'm like, dude, you look like a touring band. I don't know how I could pay a higher compliment than that. That it looks like an outfit, not a gig. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, one of the biggest factors, I got to give him props, is Nick's son, Mick. He's a lead singer in his own right. And a good guitar player, great guitar player. But like
Nick can play, man.
Yeah.
I forget how good Nick is. Every time I see you guys play, no offense to you doing the Brian part, Nick blows me away because I know he doesn't do this. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Get, like picking up the guitar again for him and learning the parts and doing all that. He's a freaking rock star. I mean, like, he's really, really good. And I forget how good he is until I see you guys.
Yeah.
So that's for Nick, but that's just the way I really feel. That's
I mean, everybody just did such a great job up there. I mean, but yeah. I mean, we put rehearsals in, you know, and
it's obvious.
It's a little tough, you know, sometimes. Like, you know, I got sick at one point and I couldn't be there for some of them. So we didn't have as many, or I didn't have as many as we would have liked. But
and you're not doing three songs, dude. You're doing like a night.
No, yeah. And that's the other thing is that, like, those Brian songs are hard, man. Like, he had a great voice, he had a great range. And
and you're laying out when you're, you know, when you're being Brian, you're laying out.
It's not easy stuff. To you know, to sing, and and you know, we're not getting any younger, you know. So
Daddy's got bedtime at 11 o'clock.
That's right. So come see us. Yeah, we're gonna continue to do early nights. My wife says, man, she's like, how late are you playing till tonight? Like, well,
you drive yourself home, dog.
Oh my God! Like, you know, when we have a gig where it's like, oh, you got to go on 11 o'clock? What?
Eastern time?
Like, back in the days, like, man, like, what? We're not going on before midnight. What are you talking about? You know, those days are long gone, Ness.
All right, there's a few people I love more than John Allen. He is the lead singer of Stone Horses, as well as the occasional putter-together backer of Charm City Devils, and sometimes even sits in with Gina Shock in the House of Shock. We hope to get Gina back on to talk about her band getting together last year and the amazing turn she did at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame with John in attendance with his band, which was pretty awesome. Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, if you check it out.
Mr. Priebus. That was my... My band teacher in
Mulva.
Eastwood.
Mulva.
And Eastwood. Mulva.
Mulva.
Mr. Priebus.
My daughter-in-law gets it. My son never watched Seinfeld. We are here at Costas. Mr. Costas is smiling at us right here, looking at us as part of our set. We're in Dundalk. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. Candy cane cash for you. That's a scented ticket.
All right.
I smell like Santa Claus. You know, when I open the...
Oh, yeah.
You smell here. You can smell the whole thing. When you scratch it, it smells more, apparently.
All right.
I thought, and this is no offense, and I'm going to take this up with John Martin next week at Christmas. I thought it smelled a little bit like peppermint floss when I pulled it out of the bag. But I think it's taking a little bit more of a Santa scent to me. Candy cane cash. I'm at Costas. I will be at Gertrude's on Friday. Monday, we will be at Planet Fitness in Timonium. I was going to invite my son on the show. You don't want to... He's shaking me off. That's all right. Only hair that's better than mine in the family is his.
Yeah?
Yeah.
All right.
Is it pink or purple? Is fuchsia pink?
Yeah, fuchsia.
It looks like magenta. Can I go with magenta? All right, I'm just trying to get one of the crayons from the Crayola thing is what I'm trying to do. My son's here, and I love him so much, I'm going to go eat some crab cakes with him. We're at Costas. We're signing off on behalf of John, on behalf of Calvin Statham, George Shulin. Did you have Shulin for science?
I did not.
I didn't either.
I had Mr. Fantasy twice.
Who was his best friend, by the way.
He was. That's why I wanted to get here early to talk to Shulin.
He told the best stories about Fantasy on the air today.
Oh, yeah?
Crazy Fantasy.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
He kicked me one time so hard. Mr. Fantasy.
He must have been pissed at you.
Yeah. He wasn't the first teacher to kick me, actually, so I must have been a real little asshole.
But you grew up all right. John Allen, rock star.
Everybody needs their ass kicked every once in a while.
Absolutely. I had my ass kicked by GBMC last month. I had my colonoscopy. They found a precancerous polyp. This is my holiday. Do you have your colonoscopy?
Two of them.
Okay. I'm one in. I'm good for a little while here, but I had a precancerous polyp removed. May have saved my life. That's my PSA to everybody out there for GBMC. I actually have a doctor's appointment, a real one, like a checkup in March.
Yeah?
Yeah. First one this century.
You don't normally do that.
My wife's been to enough doctors. I'm such a lousy patient. Mm-hmm. The day I had my colonoscopy, my wife came in at the end of the day after all the anesthesia wore off. And she handed me a picture of my rectum, literally. She literally handed it to me. And she said, you weren't easy today, dude. She said, way worse than that. But she's like, you weren't easy today, you know? Like,
what day are you easy?
That's a great answer. Can I have you answer all of her? All right, I got to go eat some ham and some turkey and some French fries. We're at Costas. I love John. He endures me. We're back for more. It's Baltimore Positive. Stay with us.